First, it shouldn't come as a surprise that people on the autism spectrum want a social circle of friends and colleagues like anyone else might. But when the first published report of autism came out more than 75 years ago, it described those with autism as, quote, happiest when left alone, end quote. That belief is still around, apparently, but many researchers and people with autism are pushing back on that idea. They say friendship and social connection are valuable for people with autism, but different communication styles can sometimes get in the way. And there are things those of us not on the autism spectrum can keep in mind to make sure we're being open and available to people who are. Monica Nishik is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a mental health clinician at UW Health. She's worked extensively with people with autism, anxiety, OCD, attachment concerns, and other conditions. Monica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, in your work and your education, for that matter, is this an idea that comes up a lot, that people with autism, they don't really want those social connections?
Yeah, I think that there can be a lot of differences in how they communicate with people, or just they might have difficulties with social communication or making eye contact or talking about things or even starting conversations with other people. And so that might send the message that they're just not interested.
And apparently this was an academic belief when autism was first being described, that it's not just miscommunication, it's a lack of desire for social connection. But not true, though.
No, and I think the one thing to consider is that not everybody on the autism spectrum is the same, mm-hmm. just the same with people who describe themselves as neurotypical. So you certainly have people, you know, I have friends who aren't very interested in social interactions or hanging out with people. So you can find that in the community. But I think overall, they have the same desires and needs for human connection.
And it seems like people are working sort of from both ends, working with people with autism on reading social cues, and for people without autism to read the social cues of people with. Let's start on working with people with autism. What kind of things might they be doing to try to say, okay, what is the social cue I'm getting? How do I respond to this?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting idea, because when I first started working with people on the spectrum, I was kind of blown away at all of the things that we do socially that are kind of intuitive to us that we don't really think about. So I know that when I'm having a conversation with you, that maybe I shouldn't make eye contact for too long. I shouldn't just stare at you. I can also tell by your nonverbal cues, maybe if you're not interested in the topics that I'm talking about anymore, and I might kind of shift and talk about something else or ask you about your day. So I would definitely say that communication, both verbal and nonverbal, are some of the biggest difficulties, as well as reading other people's emotions and kind of those subtleties in communication.
Is this something, you know, as you say, we take it for granted, people who are neurotypical, I think is the commonly used phrase. Is this something that if you haven't picked that up, is it learnable? Is it something that people can pick up with some work?
Yeah, it definitely is. It requires, I mean, you have to look at all of the different steps that go into communication. And so sometimes I think that makes it a little difficult. So I've taught people how to make an appropriate amount of eye contact with others. I've worked with people on starting conversations and ending conversations appropriately. There's just a lot more steps or a lot more things that you have to think about.
We're talking to Monica Nishik from UW Health about communication between people on the autism spectrum and people who aren't on that autism spectrum, and how we can all read each other's cues a little bit better. Now, let's come at this from the other angle, and let's start with that one specific thing. You mentioned that often, not always, but often people on the autism spectrum avoid eye contact or don't feel comfortable with eye contact, and that is misread by people not on the spectrum as saying, oh, this person doesn't want to communicate. This person doesn't want to talk to me. That's fine. How could the rest of us look at that signal and maybe read it a little better?
I think the number one thing would be not to make assumptions about someone, and maybe to just ask them about their experiences being on the autism spectrum and how that interacts with them. Or what challenges that they might have because of that, or what strengths they might have because of that. But I think assumptions are kind of what gets us in trouble, and not asking questions. So I'd really encourage people to be curious Or if someone that you're speaking to maybe pauses for a while or isn't responding to you, you know, maybe asking a follow-up question like, are you still thinking about that or do you need some more time? And not to just assume that they're not interested.
Right. In our daily social interactions out in the world, we might well not know that we're talking to someone who, you know, I don't know if someone is on the autism spectrum or not just by interacting with them or talking with them. So how can we just, I guess, have a baseline assumption of like, okay, I'm not going to shut this down based on some of these cues?
Again, I think just not, you know, not making assumptions about who you're talking to. You can always ask questions or you can lead the conversation. So if you feel like someone is maybe not being as open with you, then you can kind of take the lead and ask them like what they're up to or what some of their interests are.
And I don't want to paint too broad a brush. You mentioned earlier people on the autism spectrum, that might mean a lot of different things for different people. Can you talk about the diversity within what we're calling the autism spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, recently with the DSM-5, the diagnosis has kind of changed for autism spectrum disorders. And in a lot of ways, it became a lot more broad. And some ways it kind of narrowed it down a little bit. But yeah, you can have people who are on the spectrum who are nonverbal and maybe have a lot of like functional needs that they need to work on or need to get met. And then kind of, as you mentioned, you can have people that you would meet and you would have no idea that they were on the autism spectrum. So it can really be that wide or that varied.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. We have Ruth on the line in Madison. Ruth, hi.
Hi. So I'm 65 years old, and I don't see where I would benefit from having an official diagnosis, but nothing else explains my life. And what happens to me is people will start finishing my sentences wrong. And then the more they say wrong, the more I feel like I have to explain the, you know, why it's not that. And then it just gets to be this pile of questions. And the more frustrated I get, the less access I have to my words. And so I want to just scream. And I see sometimes at the daycare where I work where the kids are just screaming and the parents are acting like the child is angry. And I can tell you that child isn't angry. That child is frustrated. And I think that when a person perceive somebody else as angry, then their visceral reaction is hostile. And when they perceive that person as frustrated, their visceral reaction is more helpful. And my husband has learned that when I've lost my words and he can just see the expression on my face, he'll just say, "What is it that you need us to understand?" And then it brings me back to the first question that was what I wanted to answer in the first place, not that whole tangled pile of questions that, you know, are you this? Are you that? Is it this? Is it that? No, stop.
Ruth, thank you so much for sharing your personal experience, not, as she says, officially diagnosed, but a little bit self-diagnosed on the autistic spectrum. Is this a story you've encountered?
Yeah, I think that just goes back to patience and kind of asking, you know, like her husband does, like, what do you actually need or what are you actually asking me for? And especially with younger kids, they may not be able to verbalize what they actually need or what they actually want. And that doesn't just apply to people who are nonverbal and on the spectrum.
What's your advice for parents or teachers working with a child with autism who does have that trouble expressing their needs?
I think number one is trying to figure out what they are trying to communicate with you. So even if they are nonverbal, all behavior is communication. So most of us aren't just, you know, walking around being angry or being frustrated just for the heck of it. You know, there is a reason underlying that. And so, again, trying to be curious and trying to figure out why might they be responding this way and how can I teach them to communicate that to me in the future so I can help them.
Ruth, thanks again for calling in. We're talking to Monica Nishik, a mental health clinician at UW Health and licensed marriage and family therapist. She's with us to talk about ways to build connections and better communication between people who are on and off the autism spectrum. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this your story? Are you or someone you're close to on the autism spectrum? What should people listening know about the social experience of someone on the spectrum? And tell us about your relationships and how you build them. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up the conversation about how to bridge the social and communication gap between people on and off the autism spectrum. Monica Nishik is a mental health clinician at UW Health and a licensed family and marriage counselor. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions and maybe your experiences. If you're on the spectrum, what's your experience like in building relationships with people? What works? What doesn't work? What frustrates you if someone close to you, a friend or family member, is on the autism spectrum? What did you learn about how to overcome some of those communication barriers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Monica, before we go back to our callers, are there social barriers that people on the autism spectrum might have that the rest of us might not think about?
Yeah, as I stated earlier, some of those social cues that kind of come to us intuitively, we don't really think about doing them. And so when you're interacting with someone or someone on the autism spectrum, they're also having to keep all of these things in their mind at once, right? Like, am I appropriately judging if this person is interested? Am I making eye contact? Have I been talking too long? I also think there isn't always, but there can be some limited interests with people with autism. And it might be harder to find natural social connections just in everyday life. You know, my interest might be some video games that no one at my school is interested in, for example.
Let's go back to our callers now. Russell is on the line in Wisconsin Rapids. Russell, hi.
How's it going?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Russell?
Well, I'm an NT, a neurotypical. My wife, Amanda, she is previously diagnosed as Asperger's, which has now been termed just regular autism spectrum disorder, and our 13-year-old son is also on the spectrum. For my wife, when she's in a social interaction of any kind, it can become physically exhausting to her to try to understand the social cues, the niceties, the eye contact, and it is actually draining on her to where she needs time to recuperate afterward. For my son, he doesn't get the social cues either, and if you try to correct him, he becomes very frustrated, very angry with it, because he knows he doesn't get it, but he thinks other people should just accept it and move on.
Russell, thank you so much for sharing your family's story at 800-642-1234. He talked about it being physically exhausting. And Monica, I was thinking that when you were talking about how someone might have to think through every social cue. I mean, it's like me trying to dance and think, where is my arm? Where is my leg? Like having to concentrate that much in a social interaction. Tiring, right?
Yeah, definitely. And just to his point, too, about his son. So none of us really like receiving feedback. And so if you think about being on the spectrum and kind of constantly getting this feedback, because we need to have it, because we need to understand what, you know, maybe where we messed up in a social interaction or maybe where we could use some help. But that would just be mentally exhausting for anyone.
Thanks a lot for that call, Russell. So how do you come up with a feedback method, I guess, especially for a young person that helps them develop these skills but doesn't get them ticked off all the time?
One really good method is actually using role play. And so I would do that a lot with the teenagers and young adults that I would work with, especially before they would go into something like a job situation or a work situation. So we would kind of take turns being each other and coaching each other. So I think the more practice you can have kind of outside of that actual social situation, the better.
Thanks again for the call, Russell. We'll go next to Jason in Wisconsin Dells. Jason, hi.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Jason?
Well, I just wanted to thank you and your panelists. Monica, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I just want to thank you for bringing this to the attention and putting it on the radio and just sort of raising awareness. I have a 10-year-old son who's actually diagnosed at UW by Dr. Ayama. I just want to say you're exactly right with, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with everything you said, how it can be exhausting, how, you know, they can't read the cues, and, you know, even talking to my own son, I have to, hey, kind of look me in the eye, bud, you know, just make sure I've got his attention. It's just, you know, certain situations can be, you know, physically taxing on him as well. I mean, everything that previous callers have said is pretty spot on, you know, just waiting in line, for example, at amusement parks and such, it just gets him, wears him out. And I just wanted to thank you. I know this has kind of become a growing concern and nationwide. I just wanted to, listening on the radio as I'm traveling, and I thought, well, I just want to call in and lend my support and say thank you for this.
Jason, thank you so much for sharing that. Do you, Monica, see more people being interested in talking about this, not just families with somebody on the autism spectrum, but in the general public?
Yeah, definitely. I think we can kind of argue if prevalence is increasing or if we're just getting better at diagnosing autism. But I think certainly you can kind of go out on the street and talk to anyone and they have a connection to someone with autism. And so just more awareness and more communication and the more that we can talk about it, the better.
Thanks again for that call, Jason, at 800-642-1234. We're talking about building bridges between people on and off the autism spectrum, overcoming some of the communication barriers that can come up on both sides of the conversation. And you can join in with your stories, your questions, your experiences at 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Monica, let's take this into a school setting. What can families and schools do to work together to help prevent that kid on the autism spectrum from being or feeling isolated at school?
Yeah, well, this is certainly dependent, I think, on the age of the kid, but I've worked a lot with kids on creating stories about themselves, either in like PowerPoint presentations or just like little booklets. And those specifically tell teachers things that are difficult for them, any like underlying sensory, so like sound or sights or even touch issues that they might have. Sometimes kids really have a hard time with large groups of people. And so maybe being in a small classroom is something that would work for this kiddo. And so I think really helping the individual create their own plan is the biggest key to success.
And what would you want the other kids in the classroom? Let's take this like to early elementary school, the neurotypical kids to know about children with autism and how they can connect.
I think going back to kind of what I said earlier is that their behavior is just trying to use it as a way of communication. So, you know, even if it looks like they're having a hard time or, you know, they're becoming upset or aggressive or angry, that's just because they're trying to figure out how to understand their body and get their needs met. So I think, again, just teaching patience and curiosity to kids as much as we can.
I know there's a Sesame Street character, I can't think of her name, who's on the autism spectrum. Do you see that kind of a public attention making a difference for what kids are ready to encounter?
Yeah, definitely. And I think just in pop culture in general, we've started to bridge that gap a little bit better. There have been more characters like on that show Parenthood, and there's a show on Netflix that's really good as well. And I think just showing kind of that spectrum of autism again is really helpful.
I want to get back to your calls in just a minute. Do you see? Let's go to Jonah now in Madison. Jonah, hi. Hi, what do you want to tell us about, Jonah?
So, I am diagnosed with autism, and I would be on what people would call the upper end of the autism spectrum. So people necessarily interacting with me wouldn't necessarily know that I had autism just by, like, talking to me. I mean, my own family and me didn't even really know what was going on until I was about 10.
And now that you know, have things changed for you, Jonah?
Yes, very much. I have gotten help that I really, really, really appreciate and needed. And things have gotten a lot easier for me.
How so?
But I've started to go to social skills classes, and I have also like just learned about things called hidden rules, which are like social cues that other people who don't have autism like automatically know, but like autistic people have to figure them out.
All right, Jonah, thanks so much for calling and sharing your story. So giving that kind of help for someone like Jonah can make a big difference.
Yeah, and I think research has really improved, in, especially into working with kids who aren't really young. So working with school-age kids, teenagers, and into young adulthood, there's still, you know, now there's social skills programs for different age groups. They're not as many as I would like there to be, but I think that that has really helped.
Jonah, thanks so much for calling in and sharing your story. In our last few minutes, Monica, leave us with a message for the neurotypical community. You can cover some of the ground we've covered already. What should we be thinking about?
Again, I think be patient, be curious, ask questions specific to that person's experience and what they're going through. And, you know, just make sure that you're being as supportive as possible and not making assumptions about people on the spectrum.
We'll leave it there. Monica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Monica Nishik, a licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health clinician at UW Health. She's been talking to us about building lines of communication, better lines of communication between people on and off the autism spectrum. Still time for you to share your story and your thoughts, maybe your experiences. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or share your story. You can email us ideas@WPR.org. If you are on the autism spectrum yourself, was there something that really helped you out overcoming some of those social barriers Monica was talking about? Again, email ideas@WPR.org.